Good afternoon, late afternoon. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 4:32 p.m. on Wednesday, March 11th, 2026. Present today are Representative Moore, Representative Bynum, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Co-Chair Shragi, myself, Co-Chair Josephson. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lestefka, Secretary Bree Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We've been joined by Representative Tomaszewski. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office with us. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. We will continue to hear public testimony on House Bill 263, Operating Budget, and 265, Mental Health Budget. The testimony locations were originally just off-net callers. Because the afternoon hearing was shortened by circumstances out of our testifier's control, we have added the afternoon Legislative Information Offices to our list of locations this evening. Those include Juneau, Sitka, Petersburg, Delta Junction, Dillingham, Glen Allen, Valdez, Wrangell, Homer, Ketchikan, Kodiak, Seward, Tok, and the off-nets. Public testimony is now scheduled to end at 7:30 p.m. So lots of time. Testifiers may add themselves to the schedule until 7 p.m. when the schedule will close. If no one else is scheduled by 7 p.m., we will conclude public testimony for these locations. All callers who call in by 7 will be given a chance to testify. To put yourself on the schedule, call the appropriate numbers as follows. For Juneau, 907-586-9085. For Anchorage, 907-563-9085. From all other locations, 844-586-9085. Those numbers will also be displayed on screen wherever you are watching or streaming this hearing. We've also been joined by Representative Allard. We also welcome written testimony on the operating budget. Written comments should be submitted to house.finance@akleg.gov by 5 p.m. this Friday, March 13th. All right, with that, we're going to get started. As a reminder, testimony is limited to 2 minutes per person. If a testifier surpasses the two-minute limit, I will politely ask them to conclude their testimony and move on to the next testifier. What we're going to do once I that is we're going to go to two folks in South Central Alaska who came back to testify, so we're honoring their extra effort. And the first person is Cindy Mika, a superintendent from Kodiak. Ms. Mika, are you with us? Ms. Mika.
Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Cindy Mika, and I serve as the superintendent of Kodiak Island Borough School District. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on the operating budget. First, I want to respectfully urge the legislator to invest in Alaska students by increasing education funding inside the base student allocation. School districts across Alaska are facing significant financial challenges, and Kodiak is no exception. Our district is currently facing an approximately $5 million budget deficit. This deficit is not the result of mismanagement of funds, but rather the reality that education funding has not kept pace with inflation since 2011. Last year's $700 increase to the VSA was critical and appreciated. However, even with that increase, our district still had to close an elementary school and use most of our fund balance just to cover our operating deficit. More than half of that increase went directly to providing a 4% raise for all of our staff, an important step in helping us recruit and retain teachers and other employees in a very competitive labor market. Despite these efforts, last month, our Board of Education still had to make the difficult decision to cut nearly $2.9 million in positions and programs. We have also asked our Borough Assembly to fund education at 100% of the local contribution cap for the first time. Even with these actions, we have identified an additional $1 million in reductions that will need to occur next year. These reductions mean fewer teachers, fewer instructional supports, and fewer services for students. I also want to highlight the importance of the $490,000 investment in the APSA and Alaska Educator Recruitment and Retention Center contract. This support is incredibly valuable to districts like ours. Recruiting teachers to Alaska, especially to rural and remote communities, is complex and time-intensive. Through partnerships with AERRC, our district has participated in national and international recruitment efforts, job fairs, and onboard support. Because of those efforts, for the first time, we are retaining all 11 of our village teachers this year, 8 of whom were international hires recruited over the past 3 years. AERRC has been a critical partner in helping districts navigate the time-consuming and complex international hiring process. Thank you for your continued work and for your commitment to Alaska students and schools.
Thank you, Superintendent Mika. We appreciate your testimony. We're now going to go to Tony Russell in Valdez on a, it looks like, a different subject. Ms. Russell.
Good afternoon. For the record, I am Tony Russell. First off, I would like to thank EPS Finance Committee Chair Representative Jimmy and the subcommittee members for choosing to increase funds the CDVSA grant line of $1.2 million for victim services and $500,000 for legal assistance. To the VCCB grant line for direct payments to victims, $592,000, and to CAC in DFYS, $1.5 million. We are asking the full finance to please keep the additions in the budget. These funds will keep the doors open for domestic violence shelters in the state. These will benefit victims of domestic violence like me. Advocates for Victims of Violence here in Valdez has assisted me and my children to get back on our feet. We experienced hardships both physically, emotionally, and mentally. The individual advocacy that was provided to us and my children made a big difference in our lives. I don't know where I would be now had it not been for the help of AVV. There are so many people in our community that depend on AVV for assistance. Thank you for your time.
And Ms. Russell, just for the record, you're in Valdez and you're associated with a group called Advocates for Victims of Violence, correct?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
So we've taken those testifiers, and now I think I'm just marching down the list. Oh, I think I'll go to in person. I knew that. So our first, I'm going to get back in the habit here. Our first in person testifier looks like Erin Harrington. Ms. Harrington.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Erin Harrington. I live here in Juneau. Also previously lived in Kodiak, Anchorage, and sometime in Fairbanks for school over the years. I'm here to testify today in support of education funding for Alaska. During my day job, which I am not here testifying on behalf of, I work at an organization that works on enhancing economic opportunity and sustainability in the state of Alaska. I am a former staffer to this committee. I served for many years as staff to a former chairman of this committee and had the pleasure during that time to work on the fiscal issues and the budget here and try to figure out pathways forward for Alaska's fiscal situation. I'm very familiar with the ways that Alaska's economy and the fiscal status here in this body are sometimes aligned and sometimes not in alignment. The Alaska disconnect is a thing that sort of plagues us all, and it means that we are constantly struggling with funds for education. Today, I am the mother of an 8-year-old who attends elementary school here in Juneau. I grew up in the Alaska school system, starting with kindergarten in Kodiak in the early 1980s, a long, long time ago. I just want to say that when we think about the economy of this state, education is an absolutely essential service. We, people like myself and others who think about the economy and economic development all the time, cannot make forward strides on this if we cannot offer people who want to either live in Alaska, move to Alaska, set up businesses in Alaska, or imagine a future here in Alaska, if we cannot offer them education for their children. At my school, I did hear Representative Allard's questions earlier today about outcomes. We have been able to climb up the ladder on outcomes in math and particularly in literacy in recent years, and we've been able to do so because we have had funding to support our students. We are concerned that And as a member of the PTA at my school, I'm keenly aware of this and in discussions with staff and parents about this. We are concerned that if we continue to see funding erode, that we will lose some of the investments that we've been able to make in terms of literacy enhancements, literacy teachers, and creating an environment in which our children can learn and that allow me and you and others like us to stay in the state and make it our home. So I just want to encourage you. I know it's really hard. I have sat in this room many, many times and have sat, with members of this body many times. I know it's hard, but just please keep moving forward. And thank you for your leadership last year.
Thank you, Ms. Harrington. Thanks for your testimony. We're now going to go to
Chair.
Yes.
Can I make a comment, please?
Yes, comment. Go ahead.
I just want to clarify on the record that the READS Act that has enhanced our students across the state of Alaska does not have anything to do with the BSA increase. Separate funding.
Okay. All right. We'll now go to Mazel, or it could be Mazel, Joseph. Ms. Joseph.
Gunishchish, Ha Yi Adi, Guski Kran, Chenach Mazal Joseph, you had to a sock, Chutznu a Kran Chatziti. The language I just spoken was illegal in the United States for 200 years, only being legal for the past 48 years. My dad lived for the first decade of his life in a time where it was illegal to speak Tlingit and to practice our culture. The Juneau School Board has plans to not fund the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy Program for the next fiscal year due to the $5.3 million deficit. I am in strong support of HB 263 because until everyone understands me when I speak Tlingit, TCLL's job is not done. It was the United States that funded schools from the mid-1800s to the late 1900s that tried to erase the Tlingit and many other Indigenous people. Alaskan governments should support the revitalization of my culture by supporting HB 263. My Tlingit teacher is the most vital and precious in my school schedule. What I learned from Hikla'ish is not knowledge I can Google on my phone or on any other device. It is sacred and is passed down orally. TCLL teachers will be cut if we don't get an increase in budget for our schools for the next fiscal year. Wuch'in ye jenach tune gunishchish achi yisa'ayi. Let's work together. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Brief at ease. Back on record at 4:46, Ms. Joseph, thank you for your powerful testimony. We're going to go to Madeline Bass.
Hello, Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having me here today. My name is Madeline Bass. I'm a 15-year-old student from Juneau, and I'm here to advocate in favor of House Bill 263. Days ago, my district announced that we will be operating in a $5.3 million deficit for the next fiscal year. After facing a consolidation almost 2 years ago that forced us to close at least three schools and fire multiple teachers, after last year's BSA increase that provided $20 more per student, our district is still struggling. Our teachers still have no contract. Some are put in the position where they have to choose between teaching our next generation or holding a job that provides a livable wage. The Tlingit Culture and Language Literacy Program, or TCLL, is about to be cut. This program brings our district so much and is crucial to the revitalization of Tlingit culture in Juneau. Programs like this one, along with other programs or classes that are in danger of being cut, make school worth going to for so many students. And to think that our suffering teachers and our dying education diversity, we are one of the luckier districts. The Anchorage School District is cutting over 10 sports from their district, including volleyball and hockey. Schools across the state are falling down. Without a school, how are kids expected to learn? Without sports, how do we expect our next generation to learn skills like sportsmanship and teamwork? This funding is not a luxury. It is necessary to keep these districts afloat. It is necessary to keep Alaskan youth in school and learning for at least this year. So, representatives, I urge you to vote in favor of House Bill 263 so that we can keep the heads of our district above water. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bass. I think you're doing well in school. And we appreciate your testimony. We're going to go to...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could I just say?
Yes.
Both of these young ladies are my constituents. When I retired from the classroom, they were five-year-olds. They met in kindergarten. But then the size of our district was big enough, they didn't overlap until they've been joined together at one high school. And they are both involved not only with AIA, which brought them to the Capitol and being introduced today, but with drama and debate. And I think they're 15 years old. They're not yet voters, but these are the voters that I am responsible to. And I am so proud to work on their behalf.
You're making this hard for me. Next testifier is Jim Makovic. With apologies if I've mispronounced your name.
I'm Jim Muscoviak from Gustavus, and I'm going to talk real briefly about in support of the Alaska Marine Highway System. I've lived in Gustavus for more than 50 years with my wife, and we raised three children there. The Alaska Marine Highway System to Gustavus has been a game changer. To put this in perspective, when Fred Meyer opened in Juneau, a friend and I jumped into my 14-foot skiff at 5:30 in the morning and ran in the approximately 50-mile distance to Auk Bay. We did our shopping and were home for dinner, only because the weather cooperated. Reliable ferry service enables Gustavus residents and other Southeast Alaska communities to safely travel to Juneau and other communities for shopping and medical care, as well as a host of other reasons. I appreciate and thank you for your support for this invaluable system, and I'll be getting on a Hubbard here in about 13 hours.
13 hours. We'll put you at 4 a.m.
Okay. 6 a.m.
6 a.m. Sorry. I hope you have a warm place to stay tonight. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right. So we've dealt with the folks in our presence. And now I'm going to march through. I'm going to march through as I see them here. So the first is Marla Jakela.
I'm sorry, but Representative May, your name pronunciation is killing me.
I'm sorry, what?
Nothing. I know you're trying.
Is Marla Jakela there? Marla Jakela, Valdez, are you present on the phone? Okay, let's hold that for now and go to Ruth Mitchell in Homer.
I am from Homer.
Yes, we can hear you. I'm a little concerned you're going to be not super audible, Ms. Mitchell. But let's see what this sounds like, okay? Please give us your name.
Okay, hey, are you able to hear me?
Beautifully. Give us your name, any affiliation, and location.
So my name is Ruth Mitchell, and I am from Homer, Alaska, and I am with the Union of the Caregivers, and representing our clients and our and the caregivers here.
Okay.
We are
Go ahead.
Am I? Okay. We are caregivers that have people that, you know, our families are in the assistance, needing assistance, and they don't always get enough help the way it is. And then us as caregivers are being pulled into different directions, trying to put a roof over our heads and food on our tables, plus trying to care for families that are needing help. And we've got people that are on waiting lists for several years trying to get assistance. And so if we could get some money into the budget to make it to where they get better hours and better pay for the caregivers, would be very much appreciated.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Mitchell.
All right, thank you.
I now see Neam Dardis in Juneau, but telephonic. Is Neam Dardis with us? Neam Dardis.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thankfully.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Josephson and members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Neam Dardis, and I'm the director of the REACH Infant Learning Program serving Juneau, Haines, Skagway, Yakutat, Hoonah, Gustavus, Petersburg, Wrangell, Tanaki, and Pelican. I also serve as vice president of the Alaska Infant Learning Program Association. Firstly, thank you for prioritizing funding for Alaska's Infant Learning Program last year. Today, I am asking you to continue that commitment by supporting the $5.72 million increment for ILP in the FY27 budget. Alaska ILP programs have endured 11 years of flat funding, even as workforce costs, travel costs, and service demands have increased. Providers across Alaska are now operating with staffing shortages, high travel costs, and reimbursement rates that no longer reflect the true cost of delivering services, especially in rural Alaska. This increment is essential to stabilize programs and ensure families have access to support at the most critical window of development for their children. This funding also allows Alaska to expand ILP eligibility by lowering the developmental delay threshold from 50% to 25%. Right now, Alaska is the most restrictive state in the nation for accessing early intervention services for infants and toddlers. And right now, too many families in need of help are waiting. Lowering the threshold means we can reach children earlier when intervention is most effective and most cost-saving. Research shows that early intervention works. The National Early Intervention Longitudinal Study found that 46% of children who receive early intervention no longer require special education by kindergarten. Expanding eligibility would allow up to 70% more children to receive services, which has the potential to yield an estimated $34 million in annual savings to Alaska's special education system. Strengthening ILP also supports Alaska's young families at a time when our state is rapidly aging. When families receive the support they need early, they are more likely to stay, contribute to the workforce, and build strong, healthy communities. I urge you to prioritize the full ILP increment in the FY27 budget. This investment strengthens families, reduces long-term costs, and ensures Alaska's youngest children have the best possible start. Thank you for your time and your commitment to Alaska's children and families.
Thank you, Ms. Dardis. As you probably know, the governor vetoed that item last year. There is a bill that I hope you're tracking, and I'm prayerful that it's having success in this building. Thank you for your testimony. Okay, we'll go to Lisa.
Thank you.
Lisa Hodges in Sitka.
Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Hodges, and I'm the Infant Learning Program Coordinator here in Sitka, and also serve the communities of Cape and Agoon. Amongst the 15 infant learning programs across the state, we cover every single community in Alaska. Thank you so much for supporting the Senate Bill 178, expanding eligibility for early intervention last year. And I respectfully urge the Finance Committee to do the same for this fiscal year, 2027. I've worked in early intervention for the past 15 years, and I've seen firsthand, time and time again, how children with significant developmental delays enrolled in our program exit before they turn age 3, meaning they started out in our program with a 50% or more delay and now have caught up their skills to those of same age peers. By the time a child is 4 years old, 90% of their brain is developed. Now is the time to change a child's neural pathways and build those synaptic connections. This is a no-brainer investment. When we invest early on, such as catching children with moderate delays at that 25 to 49% delay is what would be if we got that expansion, we can prevent children from entering special education in the future. With research, we can save the state up to $229,000 per year, which is equivalent to a $34.9 million annually. This is a tremendous return on investment. And I thank you for your time and commitment to support Senate Bill 178.
Thank you, Ms. Hodges. We appreciate your testimony. We're now going to move to Amy Simpson in Anchorage.
Hello, my name is Amy Simpson. I am the Executive Director of Programs for Infants and Children, serving Anchorage, Whittier, and Girdwood. However, we also serve 6 villages in the Lake Iliamna area. I want to thank you for your continued support of the Infant Learning Program. Last year, this committee demonstrated strong leadership by adding the $5.72 million to the operating budget because you recognize the simple truth that when we help children with developmental delays early, the state saves money. Unfortunately, that vision was not shared by the governor. I'm here today to respectfully ask you to reaffirm your commitment and add the $5.72 million back into the budget, expand eligibility, and ensure that infants and toddlers across Alaska receive early support that set them on a path towards success in school and life. The need is urgent. IOP has not received a funding increase since 2013, and in that time, the cost of doing business has increased dramatically. Programs have stretched every dollar, doing more with less for over a decade. But there's a limit, and when funding doesn't keep pace, children receive fewer services during the very window when intervention is most effective. We've weathered years of reduced resources, a pandemic, historic inflation, and we've also demonstrated that investing now can avoid an estimated $35 million annually in special education costs. But those savings only happen if we start early. So this isn't an expenditure, it's a strategic investment in Alaska's children. And I urge you to invest in our youngest Alaskan. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Simpson. Appreciate your testimony on ILP. We're now going to go back to Sitka for Natalie Wojcik.
Hi, good evening. My name is Natalie Wojcik, and I'm calling from Sitka. I'm the executive director of Sitkans Against Family Violence, our community's domestic violence and sexual assault program. And thank you for the opportunity to testify tonight. First, I want to thank the Department of Public Safety Subcommittee for recommending an additional $1.5 million for victim services and $500,000 for legal assistance in the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault grants line, as well as maintaining funding for Violent Crimes Compensation Board. Programs like ours have experienced 8 years of flat funding while costs continue to rise in Sitka. This makes it increasingly difficult to pay staff livable wages or provide cost of living increases. The advocates providing life-saving support, answering crisis calls in the middle of the night, accompanying survivors through sexual assault exams, and helping people maintain protective orders while sitting in court with victims are essential to the safety of our community. If funding continues to remain flat, programs like ours will face difficult decisions about our capacity to respond, and that can mean fewer advocates available to support someone in court, responding to SART calls, or supporting survivors through the legal process. In rural communities like Sitka, these services are often the only support survivors have, and maintaining these increases help ensure that we can continue to help keep our doors open and provide safety and advocacy that our community depends on. Thank you for your support of victims and survivors across Alaska, and I respectfully ask the committee to maintain these additions in the budget. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Wojcik, for your testimony. We'll now go to Daniel Parks in here in Juneau. Mr. Parks.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Daniel Parks. I'm the executive director of the Southeast Alaska Food Bank in Juneau. And I'm calling to testify on behalf of our organization and, more importantly, the people that we serve. Our mission is to provide access to nutritious food for everyone in Southeast Alaska and to serve as a bridge between those who are in need and those who want to help. We are a organization that's been here since 1999. We're a heavily volunteer-driven organization, as well as being driven by the community that we serve. And I'd like to just bring it to your attention that our organization and the organizations that we partner with are facing increased demand in Juneau and throughout Southeast Alaska, including in the communities that we serve, such as Haines, Gustavus, Cake, Hoona, Petersburg, etc. Locally, we've seen our demand for food go from somewhere in the ballpark of 300 individuals per week coming to our public pantry in 2024 to an average now of closer to 500 individuals a week. We know that the food system in Southeast Alaska is fragile, with food coming by barge and somewhat inconsistently. And I also want to explain to the committee that our demand for food purchasing has gone up dramatically in the last few years. We used to sustain our operation through our grocery rescue program, where we would bring in upwards of 90% of our food from rescuing waste from local distributors and grocery stores. And now we bring in about 50% of our food through that program. So we've made up the difference in food purchasing. I have spent a great deal of time in my 2 years with the organization getting to know the people that we serve. And I will tell you that I don't know everybody anymore. We're seeing a lot of new faces come to our line. And I will also tell you that we're serving more organizations. We now serve 36 organizations in Southeast Alaska and provide the food to them so that they can conduct their feeding programs. I would like to just close by thanking the committee, thanking the chair, and thanking you for your continued support of our mission to feed Southeast Alaskans, and request that you protect any funding that's in the budget for food banks, food pantries, and the Food Security Network in Alaska. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Parks. Appreciate your testimony. We'll now go to Mr. Blount in Kodiak. Mr. Blount, are you with us? Seeking Mr. Blount. Okay. So we'll now go to the next in the telephonic queue. It's Sybil Vanderhoff. Ms. Vanderhoff.
Thank you, Chair and members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Sybil Vanderhoff, and I work in human resources for the Juneau School District on the front lines of recruiting qualified educators for our schools. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm calling to share how important funding for ACSA and ARC is for districts like ours as we work to recruit and retain strong educators. Like many districts across Alaska, we face ongoing recruitment and retention challenges. Filling open positions is not quick or easy, especially in high-need areas like special education. In Juneau, we currently have 27 special education teacher positions posted for the 26-27 school year. over the past several years, we've not been able to fill all of our teaching positions with our local candidate pool. As a result, we've had to rely on third-party contractors, substitutes, emergency certified teachers, and in some cases, these positions have remained unfilled. AERC, A-E-R-R-C, has been a critical partner for us in helping us navigate these challenges and helping us connect with qualified candidates. They are helping us navigate the international hiring process, and the Juneau School District is hoping to welcome our first three international special education teachers in the 26-27 school year. Without the support of AERC, this would have been extremely difficult. And this year in particular, as we've had to had to navigate challenges of changes to the H-1B requirements and the significant costs and legal complexities involved in that. Districts like ours do not have the legal expertise or staff capacity to manage these processes on our own, and we really need to focus on supporting teachers and students in our classrooms. In a state where recruiting educators is already difficult, these services make a real difference for districts trying to maintain stable schools. I encourage you to continue funding ACSA and AERC contracts so that districts across Alaska can keep accessing this essential support. Thank you for your time and your commitment to Alaska students.
Thank you, Ms. Vanderhoff, for your testimony. We appreciate it. We're now going to go to Richard Peterson here in Juneau. Mr. Peterson. Mr. Peterson.
I'm sorry, did you say Richard Peterson?
Yes.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Co-chairs and members of the House Finance Committee, for the record, my name is Richard Peterson, and I'm the president of the Central Council of the Klinkin Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. Klinkin Haida is the largest tribal government in Alaska, serving more than 38,000 tribal citizens across Southeast and beyond. We are also proud members of the Alaska Regional Coalition, or AERC, a partnership of seven regional tribal service providers working across 165 communities and representing nearly 100,000 Alaskans. Through compacts, contracts, and partnerships with both the federal and state governments, tribal organizations like ours deliver essential services in communities where state infrastructure is often limited or entirely absent. These include public safety, behavioral health care, workforce development, child welfare services, and education support. Services that benefit not only tribal citizens, but all Alaskans living in rural communities. First, we appreciate the governor's proposed increase to the Village Public Safety Officer Program in both the fiscal year 26 supplemental and fiscal year 27 operating budget. VPSOs are often the only public safety presence in rural communities, sometimes serving multiple communities across vast distances where the nearest Alaska State Trooper may be hundreds of miles away. We support these increases and urge the legislature to preserve this funding to continue strengthening public safety across rural Alaska. Second, we encourage the legislature to continue investing in education. We support an increase to the base student allocation to help stabilize school districts facing rising costs and declining resources. We also urge you to advance the state tribal education contract so tribes in the state can work together to deliver culturally grounded, community-driven education that reflects the needs of Alaska students. Finally, Alaska's behavioral health system continues to face significant demand. Tribal providers are on the front lines addressing the mental health and substance use challenges affecting our communities. While Medicaid and the 1115 waiver have expanded some services, state behavioral health grant funding remains critical. Now is not the time to be cutting mental health funding. We strongly support sustaining and preferably increasing these investments so communities can continue meeting the growing need for care and healing. Thank you for your leadership and for the opportunity to testify. And I'll just finish by saying, healthy tribes make healthy communities. That's what I'm going to achieve. How up?
Thank you, President Peterson, for your testimony. We're now going to go to Pamela Hooker in Fritz Creek, which I think is the Homer area. Miss Hooker.
Hello, this is Pam Hooker.
Yes. Tell us any association, affiliation, and location.
Okay. I am been an assistant to the care of some elderly folks here, and we're located in the Fritz Creek Homer area. The goal is Consumer Direct is the company that we work with, and their goal is to keep the elder home in their own home as long as possible because it's, for obvious reasons, it's the healthiest place that they could be. At the same time, it's tough because there's not always enough time to take care of the essential needs. So that's my biggest thing is that I know, you know, I've had some folks who are like so insistent that they stay home, and it's obviously not safe. But then others who just with a couple of hours or maybe 3 or 4 hours a week, they can get help from a competent, loving caregiver who would help them remain in their own home for the rest of their lives. And it is much cheaper than having to go to an establishment like a another kind of home or somebody manages everything in your life.
Cheaper than long-term care, I think, is your point. Okay.
Were you talking to me?
Yes, but I think I understood it. Thank you, Ms. Hooker, for your testimony. We're appreciative of it, and we'll take note. We'll now go on to Garnett Morey in Nikolaevsk.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you all for hearing me today. Can you hear me?
Beautifully. Go ahead.
Oh, great. I'm Garnett Morey. I live in Nikolaevsk. It's a village near Homer. I've been a caregiver for over 3 years. It actually started 8 years ago when my client was at school. The school had a therapy room for him. He's nonverbal. He's autistic. He has epilepsy. My job is hazardous. It's traumatizing. It's stressful. Because he doesn't speak. He's now 16. He's bigger than me. He's stronger than me. And he communicates in different ways. I might get spit on if he wants something. I mean, it's hazardous. I work for under $23 an hour. And I work in this, you know, he has epilepsy, seizures. He's medevaced. He was medevaced a lot. When he started getting home care, he has not been medevaced since because we're all able to take care of him because we are trained for CPR, emergency situations, seizures. We've saved the state money because we can help him at home now. I work for less than $23 an hour. The other day, I drove on the road and got something through my sidewall tire. I no longer have a set of tires. I'm driving on a bald spare, and I have to buy a new set of tires that I cannot afford. Please, I ask each one of you to please increase the budget for caregivers. Any one of you or someone you know might end up needing us one day. When you increase this budget, we will be here to help you and all your families and everybody in Alaska that needs home care for some reason. If they hadn't shut the school down, this boy would have another place to go, but he has nowhere. He has to stay home. He's vulnerable. He's immune compromised. And he no longer has a room at the school to even go to have some sort of life. He's stuck at home, and he can only have a caregiver. And, you know, they need us, and we need them, and we really need to increase this budget for everybody. Everybody needs this, and we really thank you all, because I know you're all going to vote for this and push it, because you need it too, just as much as we do. Thank you all for listening, and thank you for increasing this budget for us all. On all the caregivers, I say thank you. You have a nice day.
You too. Thank you, Ms. Morey. We're now going to go near Ms. Morey to Amy Backus in Homer. Amy, are you with us?
Yes. Hi, are you there?
Yes, we are.
Okay, cool. Hi, I'm Amy Backus. I'm from Homer, and I'm a caregiver. I work with different agencies. Right now I'm working with Consumer Direct, and I also work for the VA. So, yeah, what I wanted to say was I'm trying to advocate for more money for caregivers. And I have two really amazing people that I take care of. And one of them is on Medicaid. And she only gets 3 hours a day. And, you know, honestly, she's in the process of dying, really. She's declining rapidly. And she's this amazing person, contributed to this community like you would not believe. But she's poor. And all she has to get, and she has 3 hours a day. And there's three of us who care of her. And after 3 hours, we have to walk away and leave her because we have to take care of ourselves. And so that's just one example of how Medicaid, I don't know how to work on it with the money, but I'm not sure of it. As well as caregiver, we need quality. We need support. Voice. We need rest. We need benefits. We need a living wage, you know, in order to have really quality people. There's a real abstract way. We need this to be a respectable that pays well. So the want to apply, want to be a caregiver. Right now, it's not a very hard career. All people see it as really hard work. It's very, really hard work. We're just jobs nobody else would want to do or even could do, you know? And the fact that it's such a little recognition, almost no benefits. I've worked for no benefits. It's just insane, you know? So anyway, yeah, I wanted to put the word out that I'd like to lift wage if that's it. Okay. And I want my clients to have some good care. That's all I got.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Backus. We had some problems hearing you perfectly, but I think the essence of it is you want an increase in pay and benefits and recognition for caregivers, I think, is the main take home. But we appreciate your testimony very much.
You're welcome. I mean,
all right. Okay. We're going to go to George Pierce in Kasilof now.
Are you there?
We are, Mr. Pierce.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. This is George Pierce, a 40-year resident of Kasilof. I've got to say, everybody's calling in asking for money, and that's obvious. People need help. The Alaskans need help, and you can solve that problem right now. I'm not here to ask for money. I'm here to testify on fixing some of our budget problems. And Bill Murkowski has a plan to fix it. It's simple. Raise taxes on the oil industry. Before SB 21 was introduced, two-thirds of our legislators and their families in tow went to Norway on Alaskan time to figure out taxing the oil. Norway today has over $2 trillion in their coffers, and Alaskans were given SB 21. Before SB 21, we received 30 cents per dollar. Now we receive 17 cents per dollar. And we also gave them an $8 a price per barrel that cost us over $1 billion yearly. Get rid of the oil, get rid of the $8 giveaway for the price of oil. Now the Alaskans make up the deficit to our budget by the taking of the people's PFD. We need a broad-based tax structure, an income tax, a school tax, and you need to address SB 21, the elephant in the room, and address the loss of workers since SB 21. It's really insulting after all their promises that they made, and insulting you let this happen, and you're still letting it happen. The Constitution says the maximum, not minimum, for our resources. Thank you very much, and have a nice day.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce. Appreciate your testimony from the Kenai Peninsula. We're now going to go to Pike Ainsworth, back down the road in Homer. Mr. Ainsworth, are you there?
Hi, my name is Pike Ainsworth. I live in Anchor Point, but I work in the Homer area as a caregiver on the side. And I'm running into lots of clients that are having a really tough time just surviving in Alaska. They're having a hard time with transportation because there's no handicap transportation available. It's hard for them to find caregivers, even when they get the funding approved to have a caregiver. They're struggling with having equipment like wheelchairs, lift chairs, beds, and necessary items that they need just to survive. One of the clients that I take care of is down to 64 pounds and relies on an electric wheelchair for her mobility. And her son had to build her wheelchair ramp out of garbage lumber that he was able to get from the dump. So there's a lot of people really suffering. A lot of our elders are suffering now. I also work and see a lot of the elderly in town that are having trouble affording food, just the basic necessities of life. And it's so important to take care of our elders. They've lived their whole lives. A lot of them are veterans and people that built the state of Alaska. And now in the golden years of their life, we're seeing that they're forgotten. So many of them have no family around to help them, and they're totally reliant on caregivers to help them with everyday necessities of life. It's a critical thing, and I think they deserve better from us. And I just see so much waste going on and other things that could be more streamlined, like duplicate school administrations and things going to stuff that is so full of waste. But I see that so much of the critical infrastructure and critical things of our society, like our elders, are being forgotten and left behind. And also, as a part of that, the PFD is massively critical for these people. I think it's forgotten that when we take the PFD away from our people, the people that hurt the most are the homeless, the hungry, the elderly, people that really relied on that to maybe even pay for a couple months of rent or for a few months of groceries or to put some heating oil or propane in the tank to pay electrical bills. And I think we need to really start taking a business approach at our government and micromanaging so much more of it and taking a look where efficiencies can be made. Because it's so easy to say that we need this or that, but it's a lot harder to look intricately into it and see where efficiencies can be made so we can streamline our state. When we have lots, it's easy to overlook doing that. But now that we're struggling, we need to do that even more so and try to give ourselves a cushion in case of the bad years. Strong men make easy times, and easy times make weak men. And I think that's where we've come to in the lineage of our society. And God bless you all for taking apart and doing so much work to make our state better. And thank you for listening to me. God bless.
Thank you, Mr. Ainsworth. I appreciate your testimony. We're now going to go to, I had it here, Mr. Michael George, Ian Haynes. Mr. George.
In the Dominican Republic, they have these like Dominican chihuahuas, and they're like
if you're Michael, if you're Michael George, we're not hearing you well at all.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, but can you isolate yourself a little bit, Mr. George?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes, don't move, though. don't move a thing.
Okay.
All right.
I'm a healthcare worker. I'm Michael George, working and live in Haines, Alaska. And I've been a home healthcare aide for 25 years, a nurse's aide, worked for Cornerstone, Reach, Center for Community, and noticed over all those years, 25 years of working there, that the pay was too low to hire anybody. And also there was not enough money to train people well enough to take care of the clients. So during my time, I witnessed two people dying due to the lack of training and anybody for clients to be listened to. So one client was a cerebral palsy and Down syndrome, and she was just done eating, and the person working and helping her put her on her back and left, and she choked and died. And the other person had nobody to listen to, and he hung himself and committed suicide. So there was, on one hand, there was not enough training for people to take care of the people, and there was nobody to listen to them. So I urge to put more money for care into the budget and train people, and so that the clients have a quality of life, and they can spend more time doing what they want to do, and the workers have also enough means to build their own homes, to live a decent life and work in this job that desperately needs healthcare workers that are qualified, trained, certified. All that needs to happen so that nobody dies. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. Thank you very much.
All right, Mr. George, a quick question. All right, a comment, Representative Galvin.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mr. George. I want to thank you for your 25 years of care giving, and I appreciate you sharing your stories, and I just wanted to also make sure that the public is aware that while we do understand we may not be providing enough care, for those of you who may be suffering from mental illness, we do have a line that is available 24/7. It is a mental health care line, 988. And I want to make sure to put that out there publicly for the record. I appreciate that it's not enough, but it is something that we have available for anyone who is considering taking their life. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that, Rep. Galvin. Now we're going to head down to Ketchikan. Is Andrea Martensen with us in Ketchikan or from Ketchikan?
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Andrea Martensen. I'm a school-based physical therapist. I served in Ketchikan. I've been here with the school district for the last 12 years. Today, I'm calling in strong support of Hospital 246 to increase the funding formula for Special Education Service Agency, or CESA. CESA provides highly specialized consultations that rural and remote Alaska districts often cannot maintain on staff due to put the budget and geographical barriers. In my own practice as a PT in our school, specialists have been invaluable in bringing additional services for students in need and giving access to those services. Through rural relief, I coach myself and many staff to assist in the carryover of complex skills into our student routines. Each year, I've benefited from on-site and even training to access these experts. They share their knowledge. They make a meaningful impact in my approach and how I mentor students with visual impairments and multiple disabilities, just to name a couple of areas of service. Throughout the year, they're available for resources, continued education, coaching as students evolve and progress. Their involvement in our education team, city students with high needs, helps expand our knowledge that we can it's beyond our walls and our islands in Ketchikan, but really brings in it to share from across the state and beyond. Currently, CESA's funding is tied to the state steadily dropping average daily membership or the ADM.
didn't however increase his caseload for students and media in our district, but facilities is steadily increasing. We're asking that these specialists each year with less impact seeing through a wait list for students being able to access the services and higher workloads to meet the growing needs with less time to do that. I urge committee to support increasing the funding formula for the of the ADM time from 2013 into $26.89. This is necessary to prevent staff eliminate wait lists and ensure duplication in Alaska doesn't determine the quality of the best education that they can receive. Please help us these experts active education teams for and students to benefit. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Ms. Martinson, we didn't hear you perfectly. We started to, and then it got less positive. But I heard you say HB 246 CISA. That's my bill, and I know about that bill. That would be,
yes.
If that's funded, it would come in at the very end on literally the last day of the session as what's called a fiscal note in the conference committee. So it's a budget item, but not currently in the budget bill. But that's my understanding, and we appreciate your testimony. All right, now we're
going to... Yes, thank you so much.
We're going to go to Jessica Goodell in Healy. Oh, unavailable. We'll go to Heather Peterson in Kodiak.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Ms. Peterson.
Wonderful. This is Heather down in Kodiak. I'm deeply concerned about there not being enough money in the budget for care. I understand that we are facing hard times and budget cuts. I lay awake at night worrying that what makes America special is quickly disappearing. We've always stood out and that we take care of those who need help. And now our tax dollars, they're supposed to make our lives better, being diverted into tax cuts for the wealthy. We know that story, and we know what's going on with that right now. And I don't know how that plays in, but I know that we'll be cut by billions starting next year. And I'm a live-in caregiver for people who experience disabilities, and I've been doing that for a decade. And I worry so much that they will become unimportant when budget cuts are coming. And I just want to let you guys know that it's not just these people who will, you know, who completely depend on us, but it's also all the people that work here and take care of these people. I, of course, worry about my mom. I know Social Security is going to be having a 23% cut in 56 more billing cycles. That's only a few years away. People, they scrape by. I know the people that I take care of already have just a mere couple hundred dollars a month and to buy things that they need. I have to budget and make $20 a day stretch for them to eat on per person, and it is extremely difficult and only getting harder. I have been watching costs just skyrocket, so I just hope that you guys will keep us at the forefront of your mind, because I don't know what will happen to us if there are any more cuts. And everything is going to get worse as far as shipping, because like here in Kodiak, it's crazy what food costs. So we're already struggling. We're already scratching to survive. And anything you can do to keep things status quo or better will save lives, and we matter.
All right. Ms. Peterson, thanks for your testimony. You came through loud and clear. We appreciate it. to the committee, we're making progress here. and we're going to take a few more callers and then possibly a break. So we'll take up Melissa Beadle in Sitka.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. So my name is Melissa Beadle. I'm calling from Sitka, where I serve as the shelter manager at Sitkins Against Family Violence. I want to thank Representative Jimmy and the DPS Finance Subcommittee for increasing the funding of CVSA Victim Service Grants. And I'm asking the full Finance Committee to please keep those additions in the budget. This month, I was able to sit with survivors during sexual assault exams, stand next to them in courtrooms, be present when they told their stories to police. And that is the work that changes outcomes. But we can only do that work when we have enough staff to keep the shelter covered. And we don't. I can't leave. I'm the one that covers the shift. And when we can't leave the shelter, survivors are going to face those moments alone. This is my last month in this role. After 5 years in domestic violence advocacy, I'm leaving because I cannot afford to stay. I'm going to go back to school to become a counselor, so that I can continue this work in Alaska without living on the edge of poverty. I'm not leaving because I stopped caring. I'm leaving because the system that is supposed to support the work does not yet support the people that do it. On-call staff earn less than $20 an hour with no benefits, and in a place where you can't even buy a meal for $20. Staff aren't leaving because they stopped caring, but because they can't afford to stay. Without on-call advocates, services like the ones I mentioned don't exist, and the advocates don't get time off they need, and that harms the people we serve the most. I ache for this work because I see every day how much it matters. Advocates are putting their emotional well-being at the front lines of some of the hardest moments a human being can face. Passion alone cannot sustain a workforce. The work does not stop when we leave. The need is every single day. This is life-saving work, and I ask you to fund it like it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beadle. I hope that Sitka gets you back. Sitka is a jewel of this state. It's just one of the most beautiful places on earth, and I hope that you make your way back there. We appreciate your testimony. We're now going to go to John Bruce in McGrath.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is John Bruce, and I serve as president of Iditarod Free School District based on a district of 7 villages centered on the Kuskokwim River. Recruiting and training educators in rural Alaska continues to be one of the significant challenges our district faces. Our communities are small and remote, and when we are unable to fill teaching positions, it has an immediate impact on students. For this reason, I'm here today to please ask for support for ACSA and ARC to help us with our recruiting efforts for our district. And districts like mine, a single vacancy can mean courses going not taught, staff covering outside the areas of expertise, or school relying on short-term or less experienced teachers. I might add this also. 6 of my 7 sites are 2 and 3 teacher sites. 11 of my total teachers are from overseas. If I don't have them, I'm having to close at least half of my schools for lack of staff. Over the last several years, my district has had to rely more heavily on international teachers to fulfill critical vacancies. These educators have become an important part of our workforce, but the process to hire them is extremely complex. It involves visas, credential evaluation, federal timelines, and a significant amount of coordination. Also, on a personal note, our international teachers are highly valued within our villages, and they often wish to bring their families over, contributing to our small school. My largest school is 40 students. For my seventh site, I have 150 students total, and the teachers we bring from overseas contribute 6 of those students. So they are directly responsible for helping keep at least 3 of my schools open that are hovering around 10. Leadership support is also critical for rural districts. When I first became a superintendent in Alaska, I participated in a new and incoming superintendent program that is run through ACSA, which provided coaching and support as I stepped into the role. The mentorship was incredibly valuable and helped me set up for the long-term success in that role. I've been a superintendent in this state for 6 years. Programs like the Alaska Statewide Leadership Academy and ARC help us bring, once again, administrators into this state and help us bring teachers into this state, which we have to have to be able to survive out here. I do not have a hub. Our hub is jump on a plane and go to Fairbanks, which is an hour and a half flight. Or get on a plane and go to Anchorage, which is an hour flight. We need the support of these organizations to be able to function because our kids deserve the best education and the same education that other districts get. And I thank you for taking the time for listening to what I have to say today. And I just hope that we can continue to support financial ACSA and ARC for teacher recruiting. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Bruce. Appreciate your testimony. And we appreciate your testimony. I see a couple others here that we're going to hear from. The first is Sunshine Konovalov in Homer. Sunshine.
Yes, thank you. Hi, my name is Sunshine Konovalov, and I want to say thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of caregivers in Alaska. I'm in Homer, Alaska. I am a SEIU 775 union leader with Consumer Direct, the largest company in the state of Alaska, and I also work for TLC Denali Care out of Soldotna and Anchorage. And I have been a caregiver for 14 years now. The type of services I do are VA service, PCA, respite, CHOR, emergency overnight care live-in, and private care. As caregivers, we're known as first responders. We do everything a nurse does except an IV. As far as doctor's visits, the doctor will get paid, but caregivers do not due to double billing. More money in the healthcare system would mean affordable housing. Health would be better for caregivers. The quality of care would be better for clients. The time, caregivers would get a break and have more caregivers to step in and cover shifts. Every patient deserves to be treated with dignity and respect in the state of Alaska. Our hours, our work schedule would be more manageable for caregivers. I am asking for money in the budget for healthcare to support caregivers and the work that we do every day in Alaska. Thank you for all your hard work today, and please put more money in the budget for healthcare.
Thank you, Ms. Konovalov. We appreciate it. We're going to go to another caller in Valdez and then take an at-ease and come back. The at-ease will not be super long. The next caller, I hope, is Mr. Bill Wise in Valdez. Mr. Wise.
My name is Bill Wise, calling from Valdez, and I'm representing myself. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time. Alaska is one of the wealthiest resource states on Earth, yet we continue to live with fiscal instability because our revenue system is built on volatility. When oil prices rise, we surge. When they fall, we scramble. That is not stewardship, and it leaves Alaska paying the price for global market swings we do not control. Meanwhile, inflation is climbing. Every Alaskan feels it at the grocery store, at the pump, in housing and freight. The permanent dividend fund was designed to protect Alaskans from exactly this kind of economic pressure. The fully restoring the PFD is not a luxury. It's a commitment to the people who own the resources that are being squeezed the hardest by rising costs. To fund that commitment, we need a revenue structure that reflects the true value of Alaska's resources. Oil companies operate in far tougher tax environments than ours and continue, yet they continue to invest in those locations. Increasing oil taxes is not anti-industry, it is pro-Alaska. To ensure that the owners of the resources, citizens, receive a fair return and that our state is not left vulnerable every time the global market shifts. At the same time, we must strengthen the permanent dividend fund itself. It is heavily concentrated in financial assets that move with the same cycles that already destabilize our budget. Allocating a portion to physical gold is a prudent diversification. Right now, some of the most intelligent financial people in the world, your central banks, are buying physical gold. Gold behaves differently than stocks, bonds, and oil, and it holds its value during inflation, currency instability, and geopolitical shocks, all of which appear to be heading our way. If the fund is meant to protect future generations, it must be built to withstand the crisis we all know is coming. This is about sovereignty. It's about protecting Alaskans from inflation, restoring the full PFD, capturing fair value from our resources, and building a financial structure that is resilient and worthy of the next generation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Wise, for your testimony. We appreciate it. So what I'm seeing on my handy iPad tells me that there are no present people in the phone queue. And what I'm going to do is the following. We will take an at ease, and probably that ease at ease will be 20 minutes, I'm going to declare, at 6:10 p.m., a reminder that at 7, that is the deadline for witnesses to put themselves on the schedule. We'll take their calls till 7:30. The call-in numbers in Juneau are 907-586-9085, in Anchorage, 907-563-9085. So Juneau is 586-9085, Anchorage, 563-9085. All their locations, 844-586-9085. So we expect more people to call, and we will look forward to their testimony. But we're going to be at ease for 20 minutes starting now, although let me see. Yes. To email us, once again, you can email us written testimony up through Friday night, essentially, at house.finance@akleg.gov. With that, we'll be at ease this Wednesday night at 5:50 and return at around 6:10. We're at ease. We're back on record in Juneau, where the House Finance Committee, it's 6:14 p.m. on Wednesday, March 11th, and we are calling, by all accounts, the small often coastal communities in Alaska. We're not calling. They are calling us. We've heard from about close to 40 people today, including those who testified in the Al Adams room here in Juneau. We don't have anyone in the queue at this moment at 6:14. If you happen to be listening in, you can, between now and 7, you can call, if you're in the Juneau area, 907-586-9085. In the Anchorage area, 907-563-9085. So Juneau was 586, Anchorage was 563, and both are 9085. All other locations, 844-586-9085. We are, you can also offer written testimony at house.finance@akleg.gov. We're going to wait for you all. Many of you are arriving home soon, if not now. And so we're going to go back at ease here in House Finance until 6:45. We'll be at ease now at 6:15 until 6:45. We're at ease. We're back on record in House Finance at 6:48 p.m. Wednesday, March 11th. The hearing is about public testimony on the operating budget, House Bill 263, and the mental health budget, House Bill 265. There will be testimony opportunities tomorrow, which is Thursday, and also Friday as well, is my understanding. We have no one on the telephone line waiting to testify. We have one person in the room. If Ms. Stanfield will come forward. Good evening, Ms. Stanfield.
Good evening.
Yes.
My name is Brenda Stanfield. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify before you tonight. I wanted to come and say a very special thank you. I know that sometimes we come to this body more saying we need, and we definitely do need. I know you've heard some testimony tonight about the impact of, you know, having had the same funding for the program since 2017. And even though some years back, about 4 years ago, there was an increase in general funds, that just got them back to flat funding that year. That didn't give them any kind of an increase. And so since 2017, they've been at the same funding level, which when you look at inflation is about a 24% decrease in their buying power. This has impacted wages. This is, they have to pay their utilities. They all have to have buildings in order to offer safe shelter. And so it has really been getting to the point of very hard, maybe some programs not being able to continue to sustain being a program, you know, any longer, depending on what's decided by the council on funding in the future years. So I know that when they came down a few weeks ago, they all had some great conversations with you. I heard back of how you listened to them and how you responded. And then we saw in the House Subcommittee for the Department of Public Safety that you listened to what they were saying, and there was an addition for direct services put in. There was addition for legal services. You also heard that child advocacy centers were challenged, and you heard the very important part of the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. If we don't put general funds in there, we don't get the federal dollars back. And so every year that we don't put out state funds means that 2 years from now, we won't have federal dollars coming back. So I just wanted to say thank you very much for hearing all of that and responding to it, putting the additional money in through the subcommittee. And I do hope that you'll all support those increases as this goes through its budget process. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. As long as we have no one else on the line, I'm wondering if I might ask a question of Ms. Stanfield?
Yes. Yes, you may.
Is that okay?
Yeah. And just to be clear, Ms. Stanfield is an expert in her field, and a lay testifier is not necessarily. And given that there's no one online and she's here, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate hearing that. It sounds like we have listened and made some changes. I'm recalling two visits that I had, and I just wondered if you could help me know if their needs were met to some degree at some level. So one group was a shelter that was in Fairbanks, and apparently something related to they've got funds for the other work they do, but for the shelter itself, there is some need. And then the other question I had was related to STAR. And again, I think it may have been inflational pieces that they were asking about. And you mentioned inflation and child advocacy, violent crimes, and things like that. So I'm just wondering if some of that then trickles over to those two entities.
Yes, thank you for the question. Through the chair to Representative Galvin, the additional dollars that were put in through the public safety subcommittee, there was $1.2 million that was put in specifically for the direct service providers to help that inflation proofing. That will get them back to about 18% of where they were, so very close to that 24% that they were needing to get back to the 2017 spending power. And that will go, a portion of that will go to Fairbanks, a portion of that will go to STAR. So both of those will come up and be in a much better position than they were.
Thank you. And if I may have a follow-up.
One follow-up, and we have
Thank
a
you. I visited a location in Kodiak, and I think maybe we heard from that location tonight, possibly. I'm not sure, but I I think it might have been, and I wondered if that would be the same answer for Kodiak as well.
If you know, Ms. Stanfield.
Yes, through the chair, to Representative Galvin. Yes, they're all part of the same funding pot, if you call it. It's the Victim Services Grant through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. So by adding that $1.2 million to that line, that will allow that to go out into their grants, and it'll be spread through the 25, I believe that they have 27 programs that they fund.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Chair. Yes.
Okay. Ms. Stanfield, did you say something about VOCA funding comes because of our contribution? It was almost like a maintenance of effort factor. You seem to...
To the chair, that's the Violent Crimes Compensation Board.
Okay.
Those are funded from VOCA dollars, but the way that those funds come to a state is how it's dependent on how much we spend as a state in our general funds, and it only counts for what we're spending giving out to the survivors of violent crime. So what we spend, if we spend all of our state dollars to operate the office and we only give out federal dollars, then 2 years from now, we don't get any dollars back to match that. So it's really important that when we look at that grants line for VCCB, that they're the line that they give out, that it's not just all federal dollars, it's both federal and state to ensure we continue.
Helpful. Thank you for your testimony tonight.
Thank you.
We have one caller. They are, or he is, Tyler McNeil of Ketchikan. Mr. McNeil, are you with us?
Hi, this is Tyler McNeil from Community Connection.
Yes. Mr. McNeil, tell us your association or affiliation, if any. And it says here you're from Ketchikan. I assume that's true.
Yes, yes.
Go ahead, Mr. McNeil. You have our attention.
Organization. We provide services to folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities. One of our programs is the Infant Learning Program, which provides services to from birth through 3 years old with early interventions for kiddos who experience developmental delays. And I'm calling in support of lowering the threshold to access those services from a 50% developmental delay to a 25% developmental delay. Currently, the state of Alaska is one of the most, the highest bars to be able to access early interventions for kiddos with developmental disabilities. And so without those early interventions, they oftentimes end up requiring a lot more supports through the lifespan, especially through special education and future home community-based waiver services. But by providing the early interventions with speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy between that birth to 3 years old, you're able to kind of give them a springboard into life and really help reduce costs later on down the road for future supports. But most importantly, it's the right thing to do for the kiddos, and our bar in the state of Alaska is very, very high to access those services. And so I'm hoping that we're advocating that the additional funding that was approved last year but then struck down will be supported again this year for the budget, as it's an ongoing and important need to be addressed.
Okay. Appreciate your testimony, Mr. McNeil. So it's the normal practice at this time for me to remind folks where or rather how to call. If you're in the Juneau area, 907-586-9085, Anchorage area, 907-563-9085, other locations, 844-586-9085. We will take testimony from in a written form at house.finance@akleg.gov. That's through Friday night. Meanwhile, we don't have anyone who's calling in. We have no one in the room. And in 3 minutes, I'm inclined to move to, not move, but to adjourn this meeting and take up further testimony tomorrow. So now it's 2 minutes. I'm going to keep my perch here. I'll take an at ease for 2 minutes and then consider adjourning. We're at ease at 6:58.
guy walks into a bar. And I need your there's a party going on. He walks over and says, it's my birthday. The guy sitting there says, it's my birthday too.
Feeling sick?
Okay.
No.
You should feel sick.
Are you from around here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to school down the road.
We just need to get elementary.
Justin. Me too.
Nine of us is together.
Where'd you go to high school?
We can't.
I graduated from
high school.
Me too.
It's be a disaster.
The bartender says, the Kelly boys are drunk again.
He and I have disagreed.
Yeah, that's
like, sometimes you got to know when you got
thanks for that, Sarah.
Yes, thank you.
Saving us from our Jeopardy theme song.
Tattoo superstition. Don't whistle inside your whistle. Your arm.
Okay.
Is that crazy?
Hey, Daddy said that.
No,
family?
I think he did.
Yeah, well, I'll fail that shit all day.
For line, you know what I mean? Like, that's an easy decision for me. Red button.
Not supposed to whistle inside.
I'm saying.
Are you red button?
No, whistle at night.
La la la. We're back on record at 7 on March the 11th. It's a Wednesday here in Juneau in the House Finance Committee. We've taken all the testimony that has been requested today. We'll resume per our schedule tomorrow, Thursday the 12th. And with that, we'll adjourn this meeting at 7 o'clock. We're adjourned.